From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 713, Understanding Cloud Performance Issues with guest Lori McVitie, recorded Wednesday, July 8th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Lori McVitie, who has extensive development and technical architecture experience in both high-tech and enterprise organizations. And prior to joining F5, McVitie was an award-winning senior technology editor at Network Computing Magazine, where she authored articles on a variety of topics aimed at IT professionals. Welcome.
Thank you. I am so excited.
I know I've read your stuff.
Have you?
Because we've been in this business a while, right? Like, we've been doing this a while, and you've written for a long time.
I have written since April 1st, 2001.
Wow. That's credible. That's a lot. Initially, you started on April 1st. What's up with that?
I don't know. I found it was amusing myself when that's when the contract started that got me into writing for the magazine.
Oh, my
goodness. April 1st. I'm like, is this real? Are you kidding me? should I really quit my job or, you know, what's going on here?
Who's playing a prank on who?
Right? It's an easy date to remember because of that, because it was so odd. I guess no one should ever have an employment contract start on April 1st.
No, that should be a rule. That's just not a good idea.
Definitely a rule.
The first of these shows published, I think, what is it, April 11th of 2007. So I haven't missed a Wednesday since.
Wow. So that's dedication.
Persistence. That's what we've got going for us is persistence. Mm.
But, you know, that's a virtue, I think, right?
Yeah. Is it persistence or I'm just not learning? I don't know which. Yeah. It's hard to tell.
It's a little of both. It's persistence when you want it to sound good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's clearly it's because it's intentional.
Yes.
Not that I didn't know what else to do.
That's the reality. I'm just not sure, you know, what I should do or where I should go from now. I'm just going to keep hitting on it, even though insanity, right, says.
Yeah. You keep expecting different results from the same behavior?
Absolutely.
Anybody would say that is somebody who's not working in software.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Different behavior, all just kick it, try it again. Hey, look, different results. How about that?
That's right. Turn it on, turn it off.
Yeah.
Run it again. Rebuild it. Oh, look, it works.
Yeah, amazing how effective that is. Why is it shouldn't be that effective? The number of times I've fixed something that way and then was angry because that shouldn't have worked. I am sad that it did.
Yeah. Why did it work? Now I have to go explore why did that work when it shouldn't have. I'm going to waste all my time.
Well, and you've ruined it now because you fixed it. So there's nothing to test against because it works. And you don't know how it was broken and you don't know how you fixed it. You know nothing. We should move on. There's a long checklist here. Yeah. On to the next thing. I think I feel better.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's technology. You've summed it up right there.
Got it. Don't know, you know, there's no IT person listening to the show is like, yeah, that's that. And the message says you should contact your administrator. And like, I am the administrator and I have no idea what to do.
Right. Exactly.
Now, I want to get into this idea that there are cloud performance issues because apparently I can buy as much cloud as I need. Why would I ever have performance issues? The correct answer is just buy more.
Well, capacity is not performance.
Dude, yeah. See, you're going to get technical on me, Lori, really?
I know, right? Oh, I'm going to start using words right away. Mm-hmm. Using my words instead of my anger.
How do you define performance? Because that is an interesting statement all by itself.
Wow. Well, you know, I mean, you used to use the term performance, you know, it would be a measurement against expectations.
Sure.
And usually it was the expectations of the buyer, right? My customer expects this to perform with X latency or, you know, so many connections per second or so many responses.
Transactions per minute.
Yeah, exactly. All those neat little, you know, numbers that we still test and we still look for those numbers. But increasingly, performance is defined by me and the kid and the other kid and mm-hmm. my cousin and Mary down the street. And everybody has a different definition.
Oh, the my cousin could have built this in 2 weeks line. You're going to play. You're going to go there.
Yeah. I want it in 2 seconds and they want it in 400 milliseconds. Right. Well, you know, how can you manage for that? That makes it very difficult when you can't, you know, you're measuring against many numbers.
Well, and often I feel like this is unfair. I'm asking the customer what they expect and they don't know either.
It's got to be fast. Yeah. Well, what's fast?
Yeah, what's fast to you?
You know, it's not fast enough, right? All these terms are also relative, right? Yeah. Faster. Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm faster than my mother, but I'm not.
The only thing the customer knows is whatever it's doing right now is not adequate.
Right. It's not performing right now. What does that mean? Well, there was a dashboard that told me it was slow today. It was yellow.
Yeah.
That means. It's it was performing. Slow.
So if I fix the dashboard, we'll be good then, right?
I'm just going to code it so it's always green. And then everybody's be happy.
Well, wait, I think you stumbled on the ubiquity networking model. It always says 93%. It's great.
It's great. It's awesome. Everything is awesome. We can break into the Lego song now, right? I won't sing because that would be frightening.
It's a little early in the morning for that.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
All right. So, I mean, we definitely need to define performance. And maybe it is a latency issue or it's just the amount of transactions that are moving through. I mean, there's service level agreements. I don't even know if those are a thing anymore, especially when we talk about cloud, because now it's all third party. Like, you can't just put the SLA you want onto Azure or AWS.
No, you can't, right? You have to. And to a certain extent, that's okay. Because your service level objectives, right, should be defined on the performance and availability that you're going to provide to your customers, whether that's internal or external. So, you know, you're talking about, I want to deliver my application in X seconds. It's got to respond in X seconds. That's it. So you have to start walking backwards. Your app has to be part of that equation, right? And you are responsible for that app. Right. It's a shared responsibility model when it comes to security and let's be honest, performance, right? You can't write bad code that performs poorly and then blame the cloud provider.
Are you sure?
Well, I mean, you could.
I'm pretty sure that's the whole reason we bought cloud.
We do, but you know, it's not, I guess that's the, it's not their fault, but you can blame them.
Yeah. No, I thought that was the big power of cloud as an IT person. Now it's not your fault. It's the provider.
It's someone else's fault. That's right. You can't tell, but it's their fault. And that's the beauty of it is because you can't actually see what's going on really under the covers and how things are routed and where the latency is. You just assume. You go, well, it's their fault. There you go.
Right.
It's the cloud. Let's blame them.
But of course, it doesn't matter. You can blame all you want. There's things they're going to do, the things they can't do. I mean, depending on the cloud provider you're using, they actually send you pretty good information about where you're misutilizing cloud resources.
Yes, they can.
I mean, typically security context, not necessarily performance context.
There's actually a lot of information out there. It's just getting it into one place and into a format that actually lets you make sense out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, trying to figure that out. And the problem with cloud and even containers, anything that's a dynamic environment where resources may be changing on a minute, hour, daily basis is that if it takes you 3 hours to figure out where the problem was, the problem may be somewhere else now because dynamic, right? Now it moved. We don't know where it is now. So how do we deal with that?
Yeah.
Right. You can only control. You know, that's why we go back to the application. You can only control how your application is performing and whatever infrastructure you have it deployed on that you control. Everything else is kind of, you know, it's up in the air. You can't optimize the cloud. That's the cloud provider's job.
Right.
You can't optimize the last mile. That's somebody else's problem, right? That's you can't do it. So you have this little sphere of control that you can deal with. And you really have to focus in on that. And that's actually, we have less information usually about how that's performing than we do from the cloud or the network or the internet and the user.
Interesting. So, I mean, we're going to end up in an instrumentation conversation here, right? Like, how do we measure app performance as a whole? And I, you know, as much as I joked at the beginning, it's like, just buy more cloud. It's like, I'm pretty sure they sell me a service for that, depending on the cloud provider.
Well, they're operational axiom number two. You know, as load increases, performance decreases.
Right.
That's always true. So, you know, the idea that you could just get more resources to address performance is not entirely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That does help.
Well, we're done here, aren't we?
We've solved the problem. You just need more resources.
Need more resources. But of course, it's what to buy, where to buy it. And sometimes there's real bottlenecks too, right? Like stuff you just can't overcome. Maybe a re-architecture is necessary.
Yeah, sometimes it is the application, right? Sometimes you've got a processing bottleneck or, you know, some kind of, you know, other issue where it's spinning. Maybe it's a J2EE app and you've got, you know, garbage collection spikes where it's just blocking everything up. Sometimes it is the app, right? And sometimes it's just you have to go in and figure that out. And sometimes that means, you know, we got to get off this platform.
Yeah.
Maybe we do need to modernize and rewrite this app because the technology is just, right, so old, it's just not keeping up to expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we wrote apps 10 years ago, people had different expectations.
Sure.
About performance because we were still, you know, dialing up. Okay, wait, was it 10 years ago? Maybe it was more.
Yeah, maybe it was last year. Like, I don't even know anymore. There's so many possibilities here. But actually making that determination, like the devs are always going to push back on me in IT saying, it's your infrastructure. They're never going to blame their software. Like to actually get quantifiable data to say, this is tricked out as far as it's going to go for the infrastructure we can get. We're due for a re-architecture because that's an expensive and uncertain proposition.
Always, always. Yes. Yes. It's not something you do lightly.
No.
Right. Especially depending on the age of the app. You know, when you've got something that's been running for 20 years.
Yeah.
Which is not unusual these days.
No, no. Especially, well, you said you'd say J2EE.
That's right. I know. I dated myself. That was my last certification. Java 1.1.
Wow.
Okay. Now I really dated myself.
Real dimly. Yeah. We're going to let that one go.
I just need to retire. Yeah, clip that out. That's don't say it.
Yeah, didn't say COBOL. It was just Java. It was just Java.
I'm not gonna say that I've written COBOL, but I might have penned a few.
I might have been in the room where it happened.
That's right.
I spent enough time on the software side to recognize, like, you really probably don't want to rewrite that. But there are new encapsulation strategies. There's containers and things like that would allow us to protect the software. Like, that's also a fraught effort. I think part of our job being responsible for IT is to show, no, a bigger VM is not going to help here. I mean, I got to get into what are the measurements? How do I show that we've thrown as much virtualized hardware as we can at this thing? It's not going to get faster this way.
Yeah, more hardware, right? It ultimately, and now if we go back to the capacity, right, solution,
mm-hmm.
ultimately, that is just throwing more hardware at the problem.
Right.
It's virtual hardware. It's cloud hardware, but it's still more hardware. It's still more resources. And eventually, that doesn't work anymore.
Right.
Right. That's why we've adopted distributed application architectures in part is because not only is it better to be working on smaller chunks of code in terms of speed to get to market, but it's also just it breaks the application up and it makes sure that you're scaling what you need to scale
right.
and that it's performing right as it should. And it's just a much better model just all around. But it's very hard to take an app and start breaking it up and going, well, where do we start?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this app doesn't have, you know, it's only got two known bugs because it's been gone over for 20 years and, you know, everybody knows it, right? It's running our business. How do we just start over? It's going to cost time. It's mm-hmm. going to cost money. We're going to run into problems and then people are going to be mad and we should just retire. That's really
better to go do something else. Let it be somebody else's problem. This is not a strategy. No. I mean, the number of times I've said I'd be happier as a ditch digger is not trivial either, but I'm probably wrong.
Well, see, have you tried? I mean, that's...
Yeah. Being outside, you know, regular exercise. There's some features.
Oh, that sounds horrible. Now that you mention it, regular exercise, go outside.
Yeah, the evil day star. Who wants that?
Ooh, I like my basement. I'll stay here.
You and me both. And Lori, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Going to the cloud enables remote work for your Windows 10 machines. But once those machines are out there and on the go, how are you going to manage them? Group Policy or an MDM service like Intune is a good start to manage Windows 10, but you're going to need more power. You'll still need to secure those machines' applications, OS settings, users, Java, and browsers. With so much attack surface for your remote work machines, you owe it to yourself to check out Policy Pack. Only Policy Pack hooks into and enhances both Group Policy and MDM to enable you to remove local admin rights and overcome UAC prompts, block unknown where, maintain and lock down applications and OS settings, configure the Windows 10 start screen and file associations, and manage all your browsers. Learn how thousands of other admins enhance the management of on-prem and remote work Windows 10 machines with Policy Pack. Come to policypack.com/remotework to learn more. That's policypack.com/remotework. Policy Pack, securing your standards. And listeners of this podcast are eligible to win a free copy of the Cybex Wiley book entitled MDM, Fundamentals, Security, and the Modern Desktop, Using Intune, Autopilot, and Azure to Manage, Deploy, and Secure Windows 10 by Jeremy Moskowitz, Enterprise Mobility MVP. Simply pick Runaz Radio in the drop-down when you visit policypack.com/remotework. Good luck, and we hope you win. And we're back. I'm Richard Campbell. This is Runaz Radio, and I'm talking to Lori McVitie. And we're talking a bit about the cloud performance challenges. I want to get into the instrumentation part of just a lot of the different cloud products, depending on what you're using. I'll go down the Azure path. Like with their log analytics and things, you can see pretty deeply into an application, say where it's spending time in the database, when it's spending time in core processing. You know, you can usually pick up the fact that you're VM constrained or your network constrained because the instrumentation will show it.
You can, yes, if you take advantage of it.
Right.
A lot of times you can't tell where in an application it's taking that much time, right? Is it in the platform? Is it in the framework? Is it in a third-party component? Is it, you know, in this one function or in this other function, right? I mean, how deeply do we want to get into the application in order to figure out where that performance is? And that's going to be true whether you're in the cloud or you're in a data center, or whether it's running on your laptop, right? The application is going to have issues over time based on, you know, different characteristics of the code. So you've got to be able to dig into that. So instrumentation beyond, you know, and logs, I mean, that's the other part, right? So PwC noted that 32% of consumers, right, people, will abandon an application after one bad experience.
Right.
So by the time you get that log and dug into it, it's already too late. You just lost a third of your customers.
Yeah.
They left.
Well, you would hope you're doing performance analysis steadily so that you can see when performance is degrading before it comes to the point where it's costing you customers.
Well, you would hope so.
Yeah. But that's also customer facing. We're talking J2EE, so it's, you know, it's internal users and they don't have a choice. If they want a job, they have to use this thing. And not that I want to roll out my old age hat, but, you know, now I think about tools like Adira and the Java performance monitoring. Like, so you buy a tool that scrutinizes the app in detail and can spit back data showing where the bottlenecks are.
Right. But did it do that at runtime?
Yeah. I guess that's the question. And these days, I think that's more common because we do have enough compute power. We're looking at software constraints now. We didn't need more networking. You don't need a bigger VM. We can afford to add the overhead to do live performance monitoring.
Do we not need a bigger network?
Well, always. The correct amount of networking is the only thing that's more correct than more bandwidth is more memory.
Blasphemy. I don't need more network. Of course I do. I always need
it. Yeah.
bigger, better, faster, always.
Yeah, but could, and I wish that would fit, again, that would be easier to fix it, right? The bigger thing here is the pipe's not saturated, the VM's not saturated, and the transactions per minute are still too low.
Yes. Well, and how much of that goes back to the database? I mean, let's talk about the real culprit, since I was never a DBA.
Yes.
I'll blame them.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's always the database. I mean, you know, you can only have so many connections open to the database. It can only be performing so many transactions at the same time, so many queries. It locks the database. The next thing you know, the database is huge, right? Size of the database is a problem. That's how we ended up with techniques like sharding the database and distributing it and, you know, eventually consistent. It'll get there eventually. Yeah. It's okay.
That's because that makes DBAs happy, eventual consistency, I'm sure.
Love that. Yeah. They love sharding it too. They love spreading their databases all over, you know, the place and trying to figure it out, right? How many times can you split it, right? Is this an interesting math equation?
What is the fragmentation pattern? It makes sense, but, you know, that's what you pay DBAs for. That is a set of expertise all by itself. Do you see a role? I'm always wondering how collaborative this performance problem set looks like. I mean, I'm sitting in the sort of IT seat overall. I'm taking the service tickets in of folks complaining about the performance of an application. I can apply some instrumentation at the cloud level. I can, you know, at these different tools, but sooner or later, you kind of sit with the DBAs and the devs and say, how are we going to make this faster? Because I can't throw more VM at it.
Well, I think even just identifying the problem is a problem.
Right.
Right. Because you've got, even if, let's assume we have all of the instrumentation that we could ever want.
Right.
Now we have, you know, gigs of data to look through to figure out where this one problem is. And then you get someone who isn't familiar with the application trying to figure out what, you know, this message means in a log somewhere. And you have a developer looking at something that's got some kind of networking information in it that doesn't make sense to them. Mm-hmm. They actually have to come together to discuss it and share that information. And this takes a while because you're combing through now, right, gigabits of data.
Yeah.
How can you do this? I don't think this is a problem that we as individuals can sit and look at a dashboard and go, oh, well, here's all the logs and here's what it means and here's what it says, right? We definitely see this moving toward we're going to need machines to start looking at this data and finding all those weird things that, you know, that correlate, that are related. Wow, look, this network thing always happens after this app thing happens.
Right.
Oh, that's why I get a service ticket after that. These three things seem to be directly correlated. We should probably dig into it.
Yeah.
Right. That kind of capability, because there's just, it's too much data. We're not going to be able to do it. So instrumentation, I think, is important and we need it. But it's going to generate so much that we're going to have to employ machines to start looking at it for us and figure out, at least give us an idea of where we should be looking. Should we look at the app? Should we look at the network? Is there some link in between? What's going on?
Yeah. I used to do performance tuning on the web side, specifically on the Microsoft stack, and the IIS servers, the Microsoft web servers, they automatically restart their worker processes something like every 21 hours. So it goes 3 hours earlier each day. And I thought that was the dumbest default ever. And once said that in front of a large crowd of people at a Microsoft conference, which is a really stupid thing to do because then the Microsoft guy who set that default was in the back of the room and came to talk to me about it. and the brilliance of his setting was that it meant when you called tech support and say, why do I have this problem? But it becomes 3 hours earlier each day. They knew right away it was a worker process reset. Where if you've got that thing set for 24 hours, like there's lots of things that happen at the same time every day. And it's very hard to diagnose that. So it's interesting just to think in terms of how do you detect that you have some automated process that throws off the performance of an app and you schedule it at the same time every day. So it's like, why is it that I get these tickets, you know, at 5 o'clock every day?
This cannot be coincidence.
Yeah, this cannot be. There are no coincidences. After 3 days in a row, we have a trend.
That's right. It's a trend. And now we need to look at it because it's going to happen again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Go, you're staying.
And now you start, I mean, I hate to just be digging around in the dark, but it's like, you know, changing the timing on these interval things might be exactly what you need. to sort of hunt down that this is shifting in timing. Like you are doing some relatively blind diagnostics, but at least it's still diagnostics.
I think that's part of the problem is the lack of context there, mm-hmm. right? It's the same time and what else is going on, yeah. right? In the big scheme of things, how does this relate to everything else? And once you can see that data point in context, you can go, oh, right. It's the old, why did this always happen at 8 o'clock on Monday morning? This app always fell over.
Right.
Well, because everybody was logging in.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it seems obvious now that we have the answer, but while people were trying to figure it out, I mean, it was a real, right. They were like, we don't know. It's always doing this on a very regular basis. And no one thought to go, well, contextually, what else is going on?
Yeah. Well, you effectively spread the loads, the logins out by crashing a bunch of machines.
Yeah. Oh, so it was a strategy. I see. Yeah. Oh, I love this.
You know, the system did resolve itself. It just crashed a bunch of machines that delayed their logins. So you got
that.
That's right.
I
remember a bottleneck like that because there was a group of executives that almost always arrived at the same time and they all ran reports at the same time and just knocked the machine over. And the answer was to schedule pre-printing their reports like 3 hours earlier.
Yes. I also remember some of those systems that had, right, you could actually say, restrict who could run the reports right. at what time in order to make sure that the executives could have, right? It's the same thing when we used to do, you know, bandwidth shaping to mm-hmm. deal with performance way back when, right? You always had those special lists of, well, don't apply any of these things to these users because they need to be, yeah. you know, they get priority all the time. And there was always that option that everyone wanted to show you.
Yeah, I'm happy restricting everyone else. You just can't restrict me.
Right. That's well, but, you know, I was never in the group that didn't get, you know, that didn't get restricted. So I just, you know, had to set. Oh, no.
These sound like the client server problems we had back in the day. You know, again, I thought the cloud was going to make all of this go away. But it still sounds like the same old issues.
But it doesn't, right? And so I go back to, I like to play video games because I'm that kind of person. So mm-hmm. I play video games and I play multiplayer online video games that are real time with other people all the time. And they run these games out of Amazon data centers.
Right.
So you will hear, right? And lag kills, ping kills, whatever phrase we want to use. And you will see kids constantly going, why can't we get a server in, you know, X, like Oklahoma, right? Because they have horrible latency because, right, the cloud is not close to them. It's not. They yeah. have to go through too many data centers, too many of this. And of course, you know, right now, the tubes are kind of plugged.
Well, they're extra busy.
Yeah. On the net, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, cloud doesn't really resolve all the issues because you still have to get to
yes.
the cloud.
It still is a computer. It's just other people's computer and it's not necessarily where you want it.
Right, right. Which is where Edge comes in mm-hmm. or may come in, right? Should come in. You know, if I have, you know, my dreams, right, then I'd have a little data center be closer.
Right.
Or I'd have instances of my game or my business app or whatever that you need, right, that are closer to you because it isn't feasible for someone for like Amazon or Microsoft or Google to be building data centers everywhere people have performance problems.
Right.
They just, it's not going to work. But edge centers, right, where edge could be, you know, in somebody's closet in a cell tower or at, you know, your local Walmart, right? It doesn't matter because it really literally is the edge. Where you could deploy those kinds of things, you know, you would address a lot of those performance problems.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think cloud CDN too, right? The content delivery networks, like that's really what they were doing. They really did have data centers in every city. So
yes.
that you could move those static resources much closer to the customers and to the users.
Right. And when I try to explain Edge in a simpler way, right, CDN mm-hmm. was content delivery network.
Right.
And what we're really talking about is a compute delivery network today.
Interesting.
Edge is about compute delivery, right? It's getting the compute closer, because that's the only way to speed some of these things up when you're talking about, right, real-time applications and being able to run closer and better. Because most of the apps today aren't about delivering content, mm-hmm. right? They're delivering functionality,
yeah.
right? So they compute. Need compute. So we've got to get that closer. And Edge is really, you know, the best option we have right now. Maybe something new will come up in 2 or 3 years. Someone else will say, this is better.
But you know, it's interesting to think in terms architecturally of, could I have people, because I put my app in these sort of in standard encapsulations, whether that be a virtual machine or container or whatever else, is it feasible for me to reach out to a data center closer to that particular user and push pieces of the app to them to run that way? At some cost, like none of this stuff is free, but
no.
if the performance is the issue, being reducing the latency, being closer and having that localized compute is pretty valuable.
Well, and why not? I mean, I have, there's a significant number of impressive data centers around me. Mm-hmm. I know I'm Green Bay, Wisconsin, the tech mecca of the Midwest. We have it all.
That's it. Data processing and football. You guys have got it made.
Right. So there are data centers around. And if you remember, Amazon's cloud started because they were leasing excess compute that they had.
Right.
So why can't other companies that have data centers around that aren't using all of their compute do the same thing mm-hmm. to create, right, this basically this net of edge data centers that could be used for that? Maybe they charge the end user. Maybe they charge the provider of the app, mm-hmm. Right, to do that because, you know, why not? I'm sure there's a monetization model, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So why aren't we exploring those kind of options to improve, right, the performance? Because cloud is great for ubiquitous access. It's always there. I don't have to use a VPN, so I'm thrilled to get at my apps that way. But performance is not always optimal. Right. It's not
right
because of where I am.
Yeah.
It's not the cloud's fault. It's just location matters.
Yeah. Yeah. And those latency issues matter. But it's interesting to think in terms of now that you're not bound to a particular set of hardware, there's no reason you couldn't be going into more data centers sort of on demand as the customer needs are there and moving that execute around. But I don't know, there's a lot of tooling like that yet. It sounds more like something you need to build for your own apps.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, we're still talking possibilities.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Early
days. How would we get it there? Right? Containers are a great start. I mean, VMs promised us portability, but didn't quite get there.
They're just too big.
Too big. And, right, people went, well, this is my format and this is my format.
Yeah.
And containers went, I'll run anyway. Here's an image. Right. So now you've really got that portability. We just haven't figured out how to really exploit it in order to improve performance.
Well,
and there have been examples. I mean, people have done the watch me burst this container all around these different places and stuff. But this is one person in one app.
Yeah. It's all one off stuff. But even that elastic scaling used to be like that, too. There was a few mad scientists that could do it. Today, it's a knob on every cloud provider. It's trivial. So we could get there. We're just not there yet. That sounds like an interesting long-term solution. Make it yourself if you must, but I think I'd rather wait and let a vendor provide it to me.
Well, and you know, most people will,
yeah.
right? Most people will wait for the solution because they have enough to do dealing with the apps they have to maintain mm-hmm. and the new ones they have to build and everything they have to fix. So, you know, they don't have time to be building these novel solutions. So they'll wait until it comes out.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a demand and a need for it because some of these problems, unless we figured out how to, you know, violate the speed of light, we are not going to solve.
Yeah, it's tricky.
There are limitations.
Well, I feel like we've come full circle because what you're describing to me is what we talked about right at the very beginning. Just buy more. It's just the product you need to buy now is not quite ready yet.
Just buy more. That's right. You need to buy something, but it's not ready.
Yeah.
But when it is, you should get it.
Yeah, you should get it. If the performance issue is there, I think we went down a path that made a lot of sense of actually validating that performance issue, figuring out what fixes you can make. But you are going to hit a point where it's like, now we have to do this extraordinary piece of heavy lifting or, you know, wait until that lifting is done for us.
Yes. Yes. Wow. And definitely we need to do I think do more when we're building applications, mm-hmm. right? 80% of an application today is external components, usually just open source stuff pulled from different repositories, yeah. right? It's this framework, this library. And right, a lot of that can, one, we don't know what's in there. Have you ever looked through some of that code?
Yeah.
Terrifying. Yeah. Right? Why is this picture in here? Why is it always downloading this image, right, from this external site in code? It doesn't make sense. There's all sorts of weird things like that in some of these components that we end up using, and it's actually detrimental to performance, mm-hmm. right? So if we were to go through and clean it up or do more due diligence in choosing those components and what we have, right, and selectively including them, right? Because I'm, you know, old C programmer, right? Just include everything, yeah. every header, all just put things. It in there.
Yeah.
I'm just going to include it all. That way it'll stop the compile errors and we can actually get it. Well,
the good news is you sound like a JavaScript programmer today too, right? Just add in every library. We need 6 lines of jQuery. Bring the whole thing in. No problem.
I may have done that when I moved to JavaScript too. Yes, because it worked. I mean, it worked, didn't it? Right? You just included everything and all your compile errors went away and yeah. it was beautiful.
All 50 megs of it. Yes, absolutely.
Right. But we need to do, right? We need to do a better job. I will say that when I was doing this JavaScript programming, nobody was paying me to do it. It was just for fun. So I could do that, right? Yeah. It's okay for me to do that for fun. But if you're doing this and you really, you know, you're concerned about your users, which I wasn't because they were just friends, you know, who cares about
them? Why worry
them?
About your friends? Goodness knows.
They didn't care. you know, if you need to worry about that, you need to be more selective and particular about what you're including in your app, not just from a security perspective, right? That's a whole other discussion we could have. But also from that performance perspective, because you don't know what it's including and you don't know how much extraneous code or content is being pulled down every time to the user that is just exacerbating the problem with performance in the first place.
Absolutely.
So, you know, let's be more attentive about what we're right putting in our applications and, you know, how we're delivering them.
Yeah, I love it. Well, that was a fun ride there, Lori. An interesting set of thoughts. Any places we want to point folks for more information?
Wow, the internet.
Yeah.
I highly recommend reading the internet, some of it, selectively.
Yeah, be careful. There's some ugly bits.
Yeah, be careful on, those don't go there.
Yeah.
Or there.
Or there, yeah. But there's other bits that are good.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the thinking, though. It is an interesting set of problems, and it does come back to the same old core philosophies of understand how your app runs. And where performance bottlenecks really exist.
Yes. Well, and I highly recommend, right, peer-based communities, mm-hmm. I mean, forums, right, that kind of an environment where you can actually discuss it with people that are having the same problems yeah. or have seen the same problems, right? Don't reinvent the wheel. If someone else has already solved it, right, you know, talk to them. I mean, it's online, right? It's a forum. So, you know, try to dig through those and see what you can find, because usually someone has a solution yeah. somewhere.
You're not the first person with this pain.
Right.
That's what Stack Overflow and Server Fault are for.
That's right.
Awesome.
That's right. Get your daily digest.
Well, Lori, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me. This was really great.
Yeah, I enjoyed it myself. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.